This is Red Ice Radio, a beacon of sanity from Northern Europe. RedIceCreations.com.
Right, hi folks, welcome back to Red Ice Radio. Nice to have you with us again. I'm Henrik Palmgren, and today we have an extra program for you. We have journalist Alex Newman with us again, back again. Hasn't even been a week, and he's been attending the UN Earth Summit down in Rio. And this is the last day of it, and we're going to get an update on the conference. Alex has been attending as a journalist, of course, and of course we always appreciate people being out on site live, as it were, and being able to come on the program. I know how tight for time it can be when we were in Copenhagen for COP15. It was the same thing there, just a mess, and I can just imagine how it must be down in Rio. Lots of people, lots of journalists, politicians, and the regular spectacle that always seems to happen at these kinds of gatherings. So welcome again to the program, Alex. How are you?
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm doing great.
How are things down in Rio? Give us a little general picture. You've been attending as a media, of course, a journalist, so you're in on where the politicians and everything else are talking about stuff, but has it been hectic, chaotic? Is it pretty calm? What's going on down there?
Well, the first thing that strikes you, actually, is just how out of control everything is. They've got, you know, two-hour traffic jam to get here on the first day. They've got military checkpoints. We had to go through three on the first day to get through here. They've got cops all over the place, protesters running in the street. Nobody knows what's going on. Everybody's late. The first thing I found out when I got in here is that the internet wasn't working. The Wi-Fi is still incredibly slow. So these same people who want to run the planet can't even figure out how to run a conference. I just thought it was a little bit silly.
Isn't that always the case? It is the United Nations that is a prime driver behind the conference. Is that correct?
Yeah, this is officially called the United Nations Conference on Sustainable Development. And for short, they're calling it Rio Plus 20. Because it's the 20th anniversary after the original Earth Summit here. It was Eco 92, same place.
That's right. We talked a little bit about that last time, and I think it's really symbolic. 20 years after Agenda 21 was put into, went from ideas into being something more tangible, as it were. And of course, it's right smack in the center of the summer solstice and everything else. We saw some funny news items today where they lit up the nice big Jesus statue down there in all green colors. I saw that. Did you see that, Alex?
Yeah, it's kind of symbolic. I heard a couple of people commenting on how the new environmental religion is, you know, trying to displace Christianity as the dominant, belief system among the people. And that was very representative of that, I thought. So
I agree. I think it's very symbolic. There's probably a reason why Osiris and some of the ancient gods have green skins, and how they've chosen to put that layer up upon Jesus. I can't help to think it's all kind of ritualistic or symbolic in some way. But let's get into some of the meat here of some of the things that you've been, I guess, covering or writing about when it comes to this. I don't know what the layout or how the setup is down there. Is it different venues where people talk about different things? What's some of the most important things that have been going on down there?
Well, it's a lot different than Copenhagen in the sense that this time all of the official delegates and government representatives are hiding behind security guards. After they released the first draft of the text, it became a big secret. Nobody could know what it was except the government people. And so there's been a lot of secrecy here. In Copenhagen, you could just walk around and talk to the different national delegations and knock on their office door. Here, there's none of that. Lots of security. In terms of what's going on that the journalists are allowed to cover, I mean, they've got sideshow events all over the place. Different government delegation comes, an NGO comes, all these different billionaires, CEOs, businesses, they come and do their own little presentations, and journalists can file in and film or write reports about whatever they see there.
Yeah.
The vast, vast majority have been promoting bigger government, global government, environmental extremism, all kinds of silly stuff. But we have had a very, very few dissenters that unfortunately have been completely ignored by the world media.
But all right,
In terms of what else there is to do around here, it's just a bunch of big pavilions and people running around. Journalists are mostly just to give you an example, we had a big press conference with the Communist Party Secretary General of this whole event, Rio Plus 20. His name is Xia Zekung. He used to work before moving to the UN for the regime ruling over China. And so he came over here and he announced that all the governments had come together on hundreds of different agreements and concrete commitments, and that they were going to spend $500 billion or more to implement all these things, and that UN offices in 179 different countries were going to make sure that all of the national governments were complying with these new diktats. And the press, acting more like cheerleaders, they were clapping, they were celebrating. It was just a disgrace. Not every journalist was clapping, but it was just very, very strange. I mean, even if you agree with these people, you're not supposed to clap as a journalist. You're supposed to retain your objectivity. And so it's just a pathetic scene here in terms of what the media is doing and even what they're allowed to do. So.
Wow, that's just insane. Very interesting hearing about a little bit in the back rooms, what's going on there. But I've read a little bit some of the news article that's been coming out from Rio, and it's been, you know, going from things like it's a complete failure and nothing tangible is being done to the fact that politicians who aren't even at site are basically just rubber stamping and agreeing to stuff that they haven't even read. What's your sense of it? What's really going on down there?
Well, it's hard to know, actually, because as I said, they haven't released what they're actually talking about yet. And that's one of the big problems. We've talked to Lord Monckton a few times here over the last few days, and he is ringing the alarm bells about this, because in previous conferences, they would circulate drafts, you know, as they were progressing. And so then the few legitimate real journalists who actually ask questions around here would have a chance to publicize this craziness, and that stuff would get taken out of the paper. So we haven't had that opportunity this time. In Cancun last time, some of the drafts, as soon as Lord Monckton got a hold of them, he saw that, you know, they were calling for a 50% reduction in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere by 2050, which, you know, as a scientist, he calculated would end up killing out all kinds of species because there would be a lack of carbon dioxide for plants and it would affect the animal life. So just all kinds of half-baked ideas ended up getting taken out. So the delegates aren't actually even reading what they're putting their names to, but when real journalists get a hold of it, they can get the word out. Now, we haven't had that opportunity this time around. Based on the draft that I did see, it's a lot about making abortion and contraception universal all across the world, funded by taxpayers. We need to reduce the population. We need to do better jobs centrally planning cities and economies. We need to continue looking to the United Nations for guidance and policy ideas to get to what they call sustainability, which nobody has really been able to define. There's, you know, hundreds of different ideas of what sustainability is. It can just basically mean whatever anybody wants it to mean.
That's right.
So
yeah,
that's where we are right now. It's just, you know, vague statements that could, you know, a government could interpret them as meaning they have to do this or have to do that. The UN could interpret them essentially however they want. And again, we don't have the final text yet, but a lot of people around here are saying that it's probably going to look somewhat similar, at least, to the draft. And that's what we know from the draft.
So this is the last day, correct, of the conference, and there's been two previous days to this. Has this been a draft? Have they working for developing a draft that they can that are going to try to sign here later today? Or is there any kind of ratification going on with this that they're developing?
Well, the process went something like this. I mean, there's been things going on here in Rio since a week or two ago. They've had the lower level bureaucrats over here hammering out, you know, the different words in the agreement. So I'm sure they were given a document by some higher ups, and then they came over here and talked about it and negotiated it. Supposedly, that's what they're telling us. And 2 days ago, so today, like you said, is the last day. 2 days ago is when the higher level bureaucrats started arriving. We're supposed to see some heads of state here and so forth. And I guess their delegations are just going to give them the paper and they are expected to sign it. And somehow, I'm not sure where the legitimacy comes from, but somehow their signature is supposed to usher in this new global sustainable regime across the planet.
Wow. So what does this mean? Who are they signing for? Are these politicians representatives for the individual nations, or is it the, like, you know, the, are they representatives of the European Union, or who's there?
Essentially, coercive institutions of all varieties. Again, I don't know where they're getting the legitimacy. You know, one guy doesn't get to commit the population of his country to all these different changes and massive, you know, shift in economy and everything else.
Yeah,
I don't know where they get the legitimacy from, but they purport to be representing the people of their country. Obviously, as you know, a lot of these are mass murderers, genocidal maniacs. You got this government of Sudan, the communist dictatorship of China. So you have all these people pretending to represent people who are going to come here and put their signature on this. And it, what one thing that stuck out about this one, too, is how you have a lot of big, big, big businesses here. We've interviewed quite a few business people, and they're all excited about partnership with government and partnership with the United Nations, essentially what Mussolini defined as fascism. And so it's big business, big government, and what they pretend, what they call civil society. It's these extremist groups, radical organizations, government-funded propaganda outfits, you know, the Greenpeaces, the WWFs of the world. And so, you know, they all come in and they say it's not radical enough. They make the governments look moderate in what they're doing. And, yeah, so they say civil society agreed, business agreed, and governments agreed, and so now the whole world is happy. Except that's not really what's going on. It's just the impression they're trying to create.
Well, exactly. It's the same thing. It's echoes of what was going on in Copenhagen as well. Yeah. You have a huge corporate sponsorship going on, a corporate fascism right in hand in there. And then, of course, on the streets, there's a completely different story where you have basically the socialists out with their red banners and flagging. Is there, have you been on the streets around in Rio where are there protests and stuff happening as well at the same time here?
Actually, yeah. Before the official of the 3 days of the conference started, we took a trip down to downtown Rio. There was the People's Summit, they call it. It's mostly funded by governments. It's a lot of ragamuffins, hippies, a lot of well-intentioned kids who don't really know what they're doing. They just got paid to, you know, come here and do something. And they are trying to make these governments and these big businesses look moderate in their absurd proposals to just, I mean, they're talking about reshaping people's minds, reshaping education, reshaping health. It's just so wild. And then you have these ragamuffins that are getting paid by government-funded NGOs that say, that's not radical enough. We demand more. The future of our children is in your hands, and we need you to solve it. And so then they can come back here and say, you know, we wish we could have been more radical, but political considerations made us had to, you know, compromise. And so then they look moderate, when in reality what they're talking about here is just absolutely wild to anybody who's paying attention.
Yeah, that's right. I read this the other day, too, that the Brazilian government allegedly put, what, $5 million into this People Summit as well to kind of get things going around there. So that's pretty interesting if these kinds of ideas are thrown around there. Is there anything else you can mention in terms of the general vibe of the area down there? Has it been peaceful, though, or has it been violence and clashes and stuff like that?
You have a lot of these even more radical NGOs that are pulling off some stunts, you know, trying to, like I said, make these people look moderate. There was one, actually, there have been a few interesting things that I've observed. One of the cameramen that I'm down here with yesterday, he picked up a guy. He didn't have credentials. We don't know who he was, how he got here. I wasn't there, so I wasn't able to talk to him. But he was screaming about, reject the New World Order. This whole thing is a scam by the bankers. We refuse to submit to your world government. So that was out of the ordinary. And I don't think that was, you know, the standard hippie ragamuffin, please give us a world government to save us type thing. We did manage to meet a well-known activist, journalist, and I guess you could say anti-New World Order advocate, and he is in here he was in here. We haven't seen him in the last 2 days, so we're not sure what happened to him, but he was on here on some bogus credentials of some sort. So that was interesting as well. And there was a CFACT came here. They offered kind of a counter perspective, saying, you know, we should dissolve the UN. You guys are sentencing the third world to live in poverty for eternity. It isn't right that these rich Western nations come and tell these poor, starving African people that they can't have energy, that they can't develop, that they can't have proper agriculture. And so we need to just abolish this whole thing, and this treaty needs to fail. So we have had a few dissenting points of view. They haven't really received much coverage. I did one report yesterday. It's available at thenewamerican.com about some of the dissenters that we've had here.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's just varying shades of, we need bigger government, we need more centralized government at the international level, we need... They have moved on a lot from the climate change hysteria. It seems like that kind of fell apart on them, and the world knows it now, and mm-hmm. they know the world knows it. So now they've moved on to other issues. But if you were in Copenhagen, it's the exact same atmosphere. It's just now they've moved on to different buzzwords.
Interesting.
Whereas the buzzwords were climate change. Now it's sustainability, biodiversity, overpopulation. So same agenda, different marketing program, we could say.
Well, there we go. What do you think will come out of the conference? Give us, I guess, your worst case scenario, and then if there is such a thing from this, a best case scenario.
The worst case scenario is that they do end up agreeing on this document that the Communist Chinese Secretary General was describing in the most recent press conference, which essentially talks about hundreds of mandatory commitments by governments, $500 trillion poured down the drain on these whatever sustainability means initiatives, and essentially the whole world moving closer toward this kind of integrated environmental, or under the guise of environmentalism at least, regime. So that's the worst case scenario. The best case scenario, I'm not optimistic about this happening, but I know some people still are holding out hope, is that the whole thing collapses, is that we'll get a couple of brave governments, a couple of people that are willing to stand up to the system and point out that it's just a giant fraud, and that they could derail the whole process. Now, I don't think that's going to happen. They wouldn't have announced all of this progress that they've made if there was a serious risk of that happening.
Yeah.
But you never know.
Are there any hints that there are any countries or any delegates that are of this persuasion that you just mentioned?
I know of several governments that aren't as enthusiastic about this as the rest. There have been some governments that have stood up in the past against this kind of hysteria. Whether they will cave in, and now they have caved in on these kinds of major, major globalist programs that these people are trying to implement. One example that comes to mind is Václav Klaus of Czechoslovakia. His heart is in the right place. He's doing what he can to hold back the tide of this. But, you know, it happened the same thing with the EU. They wanted him to sign something from the EU. He refused for as long as he could. And finally, they forced his hand, and he had no alternative left, essentially, but to jump on board, however reluctantly. And he said it was reluctantly and that there was no other option and it would have been done anyways. So there are a few sensible leaders left around the world who at least don't support this, whether they will stand up and derail the whole process and have, you know, the wrath of the elite, the elite's dupes, and this whole press corps here that seems incredibly enthusiastic about building this new regime. I don't know. That would take a lot of courage, and I'm not sure we have any leaders that courageous.
Interesting. Hey, by the way, you were interviewing several people down there. You've talked with the Socialist International Women, correct? Tell us about this. What happened there?
Actually, I talked with Gro
Harlem Brundtland. Yeah, that's right. You got it.
So I had a quick chat with her. I know one of her big deals down here is supporting population control, reducing the number of humans. She believes that the best way to do it is by promoting more feminism, promoting more abortion, promoting more tax-funded contraception. So we got her talking about some of that stuff. The former Prime Minister of Ireland was right there with her. They're apparently the quote-unquote elders on these issues. And so they're both talking about the same thing. We have talked to a lot of people. All of our footage now, or much of our footage now, is back in the U.S. being prepared by our team there. So that's going to be going up online over the coming days. We've talked to a couple of Brazilian ministers. We just a little while ago, I was able to ask this whole U.N. panel, including the executive coordinator of this whole conference, a French socialist named Brice Lalonde. You know, the science is crumbling. All these criticisms are being ignored by these pathetic journalists who are just clapping for everything you guys say. But how do you answer these critics?
Yeah.
And he answered a completely different question and, you know, pretended like I didn't even ask the question that I asked. So that's what you're seeing a lot of when you actually ask hard questions.
Yeah.
We also interviewed the president of the World ICLEI. I don't know if you know what ICLEI is, the International Council of Local Environmental
Initiatives. Oh, yeah. Sure. It's a huge thing over in America, right? They're trying to change local politics and everything else.
Yeah, exactly. They're trying to use local governments to implement this sustainability, green, whatever you want to call it, stuff. And, you know, because the U.S. government never ratified Agenda 21, which is the international agreement that came out of the last Rio conference 20 years ago. In America, treaties have to be ratified by the Senate, and they know better than to try to put that through the Senate because you need 2/3 of the Senate and they'll never get it. The political pressure is just too tough. So what they're doing in the United States, now I'm not as familiar with how they operate in the rest of the world, but in the United States, they're using federal grants through the executive branch to try to push this in local communities and on state governments. They're using ICLEI. So they kind of get these local governments to sign up, and then they give them all these tools to implement the sustainability schemes. So we interviewed him yesterday. He was either not telling the full truth or he was very ignorant about what's going on with his organization. I asked him a question about the political pressure in the United States, one big recent development we had is that the state of Alabama, unanimously in both houses, the state House of Representatives and the state Senate, decided to outlaw Agenda 21 and ICLEI within the entire state. The governor signed it. So ICLEI is now illegal in Alabama.
Yep.
And this president of the organization said he had not heard about that. So either he's not paying attention and doing his job, or he was fibbing. But we did get a lot of good quotes, and we're going to be putting up some of that material in video form and probably in my upcoming reports as well online. So
really, really good. Yeah, it's great stuff, Alex, and you're obviously busy down there. So again, we really appreciate your time here. Now, are there any hints that there are some kind of follow-up to Agenda 21 in the works? Has this been discussed to your knowledge at all?
That's the whole goal of this summit, actually, is to build on the Agenda 21 foundation and keep making it bigger and stronger and more centralized and keep moving the agenda forward. So that is essentially what the goal of this conference is, and that is what the agreement they're hoping for is going to take us towards. Now, again, I haven't seen what the final draft looks like. I've talked to a couple of the negotiators from different European countries, and they tell me that there was still some disagreements with that draft text that they did release. So there could be some changes. But based on what we've seen, it looks like it's going to be, you know, Agenda 21 kind of on steroids. Just putting it more into overt language, creating mandatory enforcement mechanisms. As I said, the UN Development Program is going to be using their offices around the world to make sure these things are being enforced within national countries by national governments. And so, yeah, it's essentially the same thing, just a lot bigger, a lot stronger, and a lot more well-funded.
Now, what are some of the most dangerous aspects that you see here? Is it the language that so far is contained within the drafts of the documents that are going to be signed, the fact that nothing, it seems tangible, is really written in there, meaning that this can be interpreted in a number of different ways? So we might have a politician down there now signing his name on the paper in behalf of a country or you know, like the EU or something else. But then the interpretation of this varies so much, so we might end up under the umbrella of something really, really different, if you will, than they thought that they were signing for in the first place. Is that a potential danger in all of this?
Well, I think that is one of the big dangers. I mean, the language itself is scary enough, the things they're talking about. I mean, there's just this zeal here for reducing the human population that's just frightening, if you ask me. It's this anti-human attitude that it's difficult to imagine unless you can experience this here for yourself. But the vagueness that you just mentioned, I think, is very frightening as well, because, you know, right now it might mean one thing when they're talking in the negotiations. If there's any governments that are still representing their people, they might say, you know, okay, we can live with that if that's what it really means, and we'll take your word for it.
Yeah.
And then 10 years, 20 years, 30 years down the line, once these institutions are more well-funded, you know, built up a little more, then they can, you know, start slowly changing the definitions around, start slowly reinterpreting what it actually means, and then we could end up with something even more monstrous than what's coming out here right now on paper. So I think that is a big danger, absolutely.
For sure, reducing the population. How is this being discussed so far? In what context is this coming up?
Well, they're very well aware now that even the term population control has gotten such a negative connotation, because you still have a lot of people around the world that are very religious. You have, you know, 1 billion Catholics who are opposed to any form of population control other than abstinence and, you know, these types of measures. So they're using much more vague language. I've heard them even use the word voluntary several times. Because actually, we talked to Ted Turner. He is the founder of CNN, big rich billionaire, the head of the UN Foundation, and that's another one of the reports I did. He's called China's population control program, you know, where if you have more than one kid, they will force you to have an abortion, no matter how far along you are. Just absolutely barbaric, monstrous insanity. And he thought that was a wise idea, to quote him. So that is the general attitude around here. They've just become much more careful with their words. Now they talk about, you know, we need to empower women. We need to use educational outreach to teach people why they should have less children to save the planet. We need to use voluntary family planning measures, by which they mean more abortions, more sterilizations. And, I mean, when you look at what the history of these programs, you know that when they say voluntary, that's a lie. I did a report not long ago about how in India, American taxpayers and British taxpayers are financing coercive sterilization. They're rounding people up and sterilizing them. Some of them are dying because the medical care is so poor. Sometimes they bribe them with you know, the equivalent of $10, $15, or an article of clothing or some food to go get sterilized. Well, and so that's not what voluntary means, but that's the terms they're using here a lot more. So.
Jeez, wow, okay. So ultimately, do you feel that this is about the furtherance of global government? Because from their point of view, one of the problems that they're having at this stage is that they must be able to decide for other nations what they should and shouldn't do, because otherwise this will stand in the way of their, you know, on paper, seemingly altruistic motives and objectives, correct? So is everything about trying to get other people, other countries to submit to their global government ideas, pretty much?
I think that is the, you know, the central unifying theme behind all of this. It's to move toward further control at the international level, more centralization of power, less freedom, less national sovereignty, less prosperity. I mean, they keep talking about how this is going to increase prosperity and increase jobs, but that's just all nonsense. You can look at anywhere where these kinds of things have been even started to be implemented, and you see economic destruction, devastation. Now imagine doing that in a country like Africa, where countries like the ones in Africa, where these people are already starving. You know, what's it going to mean when they have to pay carbon tax to get electricity? Or what's it going to mean when they have to power their, you know, their stoves and their cars and their lives with solar panels and windmills? They already don't have electricity. And so that's why they die early. That's why they don't have enough food.
Right.
And now we're talking about imposing on this on them forever, you know, making them use these kinds of dubious technologies that don't have a very good track record. And so it's about reducing consumption, and they say that quite openly, reducing consumption and furthering central control and reducing the population of humans. That's what it is, and they'll say that. Sometimes even in those terms, a lot of times not quite as out front and out in the open, but yeah. That's what it's about.
Well, this would mean if these were real tangible ideas, really, that were discussed, this would mean that they, developing nations, would have to, take loans from the World Bank to get further in debt with money that they don't have to build up an infrastructure that adheres to these kinds of ideas, meaning like solar panels, wind power and everything else that's kind of weak alternatives to what we already have. What would it more mean, do you think, for developing nations? Would this simply just stifle their potential to develop then in that sense like the Western world has done? Or is there something real that could be offered, do you think, from the Western world that it might have already learned from some of the mistakes, if you will, then that we have done from the point of view of the environment? Or what? How do you see this, Alex?
Well, if you look the countries that are the most developed, that have the freest markets, the most prosperity, are the ones that best protect their environment. So the idea that forcing these people to live by UN dictates would preserve the environment, I don't think that would be the case. I think, as you mentioned, the development issue, I think they want to keep these people underdeveloped. They want to reduce the amount of people in third world countries. Now, you know, the dictators ruling over these populations, I'm sure, are going to benefit. They didn't get them to come here and do all this extravaganza without anything. You know, they're going to benefit, the people who are purportedly representing these starving populations and these third world people. But as far as the people themselves, I think they're going to suffer immensely. I think they already are suffering immensely from previous versions of this kind of lunacy, from UN programs, Western world. They call them aid programs, but we've shown that foreign aid results in more poverty. It just tends to benefit the government and the crooked officials who just pocket the government. Then you have these international lending institutions, multilateral development banks, the World Bank. So they lend money to these tin pot dictators. The dictators buy limousines and private jets and hookers, and then they stick the poor populations with the bill and with the interest. So you've got the population enslaved then to these debts, and they didn't benefit at all from any of that money. That was the plan all along.
It's absurd. This is, to me as well, mostly about the answers that they offer is to go backwards. I understand some of the problems with the environment. There's obviously something real and tangible there, because otherwise they wouldn't be able to play so much on people's emotions, although much of it is ramped up and not as bad, I think, as they want it to be. But is there any viable, good options being discussed as far as you've known or seen so far? I'm talking about things like actually real working free energy, actually putting money into research for things that are could serve as a good option to the fossil fuel economy that we have right now.
Well, You... I don't think that there's much good being discussed here. At one of the press conferences that CFACT gave yesterday, they offered some different types of solutions. Because, you know, you hit the nail right on the head. There are real environmental issues in the world.
Sure.
And anyone who says that there aren't is just putting their head in the sand. So they use that reality that there are real environmental problems. I don't think climate change is one of them, and I don't think overpopulation or species loss represent real problems. But there are real problems. Pollution in the oceans, pollution in the air, deforestation in third world countries, you know, these mega mines that are polluting all the rivers and the water and killing people and all kinds of stuff like that. So there are real environmental problems, but I don't think they're actually trying to address any of them. I think environment is just a cover for the more sinister agenda that they're working on. If this was about saving the environment, then we could use, you know, tested and true solutions to preserve the environment, and that includes protection of private property rights, giving people an incentive to protect land, giving people an incentive to protect rivers by defining private property rights, eliminating the problem of the tragedy of the commons, increasing prosperity. Someone mentioned this yesterday. When you're hungry, you only have one thing on your mind, and that's getting your next meal. Now, once you're well-fed, once you have a shelter, then you can worry about things like preserving the environment. So the best solution, if we want to preserve the environment in the places where it's being destroyed, and that's largely the third world today, is to lift these people out of poverty, to let them develop, to let them use carbon-based energy until the market produces something that's more efficient and more economically viable.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
These people need development, and that's how we can protect the environment. These people don't need windmills. These people don't need UN bureaucrats telling them what they can and can't do. These people don't need carbon taxes. These people need prosperity. These people need food. And you know, in my opinion, markets are the way to get there. Private property is the way to get there. And dealing with these issues where they're closest to the people. You know, the local community knows what the environmental problem is. The national government knows better what the nation's environmental problems are. The UN has no idea. These are just tax-funded bureaucrats who are trying to preserve their job. And, you know, they want to get a pay increases and they want to accumulate more power. So the whole incentive structure that has been created and that is being furthered and perpetuated through this conference is just going to lead to more of the same disasters, more environmental degradation, more poverty, more starvation, and on top of that, you have then the true agenda, which is closer to global government, more control over humanity, taking the Western world down, taking increasing amounts of wealth from the Western world, imposing increasingly strict controls on the people of the Western world, and just letting the people of the third world continue to live in poverty and yeah. trying to eventually reduce the population down there through whatever different measures that they're working on.
Yeah, see, some of these points that you bring up are very, unfortunately, very difficult to communicate to some people who are, they're stuck on the emotional argumentation points on these things. I mean, again, if you're against some of the ideas that we're discussing at a conference like this or what have you, then you're an oil pumping evil capitalist and want to exploit poor people, you know, something like that. I don't know. And what many people seem to miss and don't understand is that centralization, these huge organizations like the UN and others, they become dumb in a sense. They become stupid because they lose that touch, as you said, with what's going on locally in a small area. So when you have these huge organizations that are going to run centralized decision making over what's should be done here or there around in the world, it just won't work. And so again, this is very, very difficult to explain to some people. And then the second level, as you talked about, Alex, is the global government, the real, you know, agenda behind the green curtain, if you will. How do you think that this could be communicated? When I was in Copenhagen, I think you feel the same way maybe now when you're down in Rio. When you look around at some of the people that are there attending the conference, it seems like they will never understand this. I don't know if they're on the payroll or just simply in that regard, well-intending, you know, people who you know, they want something good to come out of it, but they might not just be able to put together the piece of the puzzle, if you will. But could this be communicated, do you think? Could there be a change in the general attitude about what's going on at conferences like these and in years ahead?
I hope so. And, you know, that's the real divide right there, because I have no doubt that a great percentage of the people who are here participating at this summit are well-intentioned. Now, the governments, I don't know so much, but a lot of these kids that are here protesting, a lot of these NGOs, You know, they have well-intentioned people there. These people don't want any harm to anybody. They think they're doing what's right. Now, you know, obviously there are people who know that this is all a scam and either their job depends on it or they've invested so much that they can't back out now, their career would be shot, whatever. But the well-intentioned people, I think we can reach. And then the people who know the truth, they will be reached later. Once a critical mass is reached and, you know, you can't hide from it anymore, then their own self-interest will dictate that they have to finally acknowledge that this is all a scam. Now, the people who are well-meaning, I think those are the easiest to reach. What the best way to do that is, I don't really know, because they have used a lot of this emotionalism. You know, oh, if you don't agree with what the UN is doing to save the planet, then you must hate life. You must hate the planet. You must hate the environment. And yeah. It's quite the opposite. The people who disagree with this, they do disagree because they love life, because they love the planet, because they want to save the environment. And once you can get past, again, we discussed this last time I was on with you, once you get past the emotional barrier, then I think it's easier to communicate with some of these people. And because I think that a lot of these people are well-meaning, I think once you can, you know, explain to them the other side of this picture and show them that the propaganda they've been fed, that if you don't agree with the UN, then you hate the environment. Once you can show them that that's false, that that's propaganda, then you can communicate and, you know, show them what the science, what the real scientists have to say. You can show them why so many scientists resigned from the IPCC, furious about all the lies that you know, they tried to have removed and were ignored. You can show them why so many well-meaning people don't agree with this kind of nonsense. And once we reach them, then the jig is up for the UN. Then we can get to the next step of abolishing this monstrous institution and, you know, trying to figure out from there how we can, you know, live in a good way and save the environment and have prosperity for everyone. Then, but to do that, I think first we need to reach the well-meaning people. Then the non-well-meaning people will just come along because otherwise, you know, their careers might be over. Their self-interest will just bring it about that way. And then we can start discussing solutions to the real problems that do exist.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think that they're running out of steam slowly? I mean, this is a big machine, if you will, that's operating, working here. And it's so big that even if the engine is shut off, it will still, you know, propel forward for quite some time because it's just so humongous. Is this the same case, do you think, with, you know, the climate change movement or the UN-driven aspects of this because of IPCC, the scandals here because of Climate Gate? Is it slowly being deflated, do you think? But it just, the reality of this has simply just not caught up with the masses yet? Or how do you see this, Alex?
Well, I think your point about kind of the inertia here is right on the mark. These people kind of live in this giant bubble of environmentalists and, you know, journalists who just copy press releases from the UN and repeat them. And then these government delegates who tell them, you know, you need us to save you because you are too stupid and you consume too much resources, so we will save you, just continue paying us big salaries. So these people kind of live in a bubble, and I was amazed at how little you hear about, you know, the implosion, the literal implosion of the climate change movement. The IPCC report has just been torn apart. Reputable scientists have been denouncing it. Even reputable scientists who were working with it have been denouncing it. And these people here, they're just oblivious. I mean, a lot of them don't even know what's going on in
this
regard.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, the thing falls apart, and then the UN starts on with the next issue. And these people don't even pay attention to what happened with that. They just get the press release about, okay, sustainability, and then that's the new issue. So it's just like being in a bubble here, like this crazy groupthink. And the inertia, it wasn't even a hiccup. Global warming fell apart, then we went to climate change. Climate change fell apart, now we're on to sustainability. And there wasn't even a hiccup in between as far as the UN was concerned.
It's a good point. They just keep on going, inventing new words. Is this, where is this going from now on then, do you think? Are there already, new items set up on the agenda of, okay, we're going to meet up again in, you know, I don't know, next year? Is it a COP? What is next now? 17, 18? I don't even keep track of it anymore. or where is it going from here, do you think, Alex?
Yeah, they're definitely working on setting up newer and better and bigger conferences. One of the things that you hear a lot is, okay, in 2014, we're going to start doing this. In 2015, we're going to get back together and see how we've all done on this. And so they're already setting all kinds of benchmarks. And this parade is not going away anytime soon. Like you said, there's too much inertia here. These bureaucrats are, they're used to this lifestyle now of going to stay in five-star hotels and in resort cities, Rio, Cancun, and Durban. And so they don't want that to end. So until you know, the public really gets furious. And we're getting there in the United States. I don't know about the rest of the world. Sweden, I think, has quite a ways to go.
I think so, too. I think you're right. no, but this is really, that's encouraging in that sense, at least, that there are people who are waking up and looking at the other side of this coin. And at the end of the day, is that what you feel it is at this point? It is a hand few selected globalists that know the true agenda. They're pushing ahead because it serves them well. And then maybe you have the pundits in between here, the middlemen, if you will, that are enjoying going to conferences like these, and it's a lot of fun, and you know, it's global peace, etc. And they just kind of want to keep this going because it's fun for them, makes them feel good too, maybe. Or is there more behind it than this? Is it? Do you feel that the drive is coming from another area? I mean, again, you briefly alluded to people like Ted Turner before, and there's other, you know, major globalist families. It seems behind these kinds of movements as well. You mentioned the WWF, that's Prince Philip, if I'm not mistaken, who were the originator from this. So it seems like that the money is going to keep on pouring in to keep these things going, correct? Or how do you see this?
Absolutely. I mean, until the people get up and really like scream and say, enough of this, stop wasting our money, stop wasting resources on these ridiculous conferences, and stop coming up with these absurd agreements, it's not going to stop. In terms of how it's all going forward, how it's being propelled, I do think there are people who are not so much in the public eye, who are much more involved in calling the shots than the world media would like us to believe. I don't think most of them even came to this conference. I think they just make phone calls from their cozy offices or their penthouse resorts and you know, tell the people here what they need to be doing. But the incentive structure has been set up so well that it's almost like a self-perpetuating machine. So you've got the bureaucrats on the tax dole. I mean, they need their salaries, so they don't want this to end. They like to surround the world. They don't want this to end. Yeah. The journalists, I mean, they get to talk to fancy people, these politicians, the celebrities. They feel important. They don't want to rock the boat. They know that, I mean, even if they did start asking questions, they don't want to rock the boat. They don't want to get in trouble. They don't want to lose their opportunity to travel along with the circus and, you know, get to meet the celebrities and go to the resort cities, you know, expenses paid by their companies and so forth. And then you've got the civil society groups. I mean, they've got payrolls to make, so they need to keep the donations flowing in. You know, they want government money, so they need to go along with the agenda that's being set by the government, or the government funds will dry up. You know, CFACT is an environmentalist group. I don't see any governments giving them money. And I'm not surprised, because they're saying that the real solutions to these problems don't lie in, you know, government action necessarily. And they especially don't lie with the UN, dictators club. So the incentive structure that they set up kind of makes this a self-perpetuating machine. But there are, I think, people who are, you know, we could say calling the shots or involved in calling the shots, who are not so much in the public eye.
We have to just mention this briefly about all the celebrities there, the actors and the musicians, again, well-meaning idiots to show up to put their face on this conference and other similar kind of organizations or conferences that are put together as well. I don't know how many different people are on there now, but it's almost like this is something they do to further their own career almost as well. That when they become associated with something like this, it's, oh my God, they're so humanitarian, they're so great. But it seems like it's all still an ego drive, because it's timely and it's the right thing to do. How many celebrities and actors and musicians are down there? Have you been able to keep track of this, Alex?
Oh, they're all over the place, and they're giving press conferences. Just the other day, we had Richard Branson and Lucy Lawless here giving a press conference with Greenpeace. Oh. They signed some petition saying that the people of Greenland shouldn't be allowed to drill oil. They need to stay poor, because if they spill oil, then it's going to be set. So these, you know, billionaires, but Richard Branson, he's the CEO of an airplane company, and he uses fossil fuels like crazy. So he comes here, the billionaire, and says, you know, these poor people in Greenland, they can't be allowed to drill oil. We need to, you know, protect some seal or protect some shrimp. And we actually talked to an Icelandic journalist who talked about how these, you know, campaigns driven by these green organizations, the real devastation that they cause in the communities. He talked about a deceptive ad campaign by Greenpeace that was done to a group of villagers up in the far north in North America, in Canada and Alaska. So they set up this fake footage of, you know, one of the native population people hunting a seal. And it wasn't even actually a native guy hunting a seal. It was set up specifically for Greenpeace. They analyzed it with professional experts and defense analysts, and they showed that it was a fake propaganda video intentionally designed to mislead people. And so governments around the world got up in arms, and they orchestrated a big hate mail campaign to this little community of natives that have been doing this for, you know, hundreds, thousands of years. And now the you can see the results, so they're not allowed to catch their seals anymore. Out of about 600 people in the village, he told us, 100 of those people committed suicide in just 1 year. Wow. And what's left is just a human tragedy of monumental proportions.
Well, that's a really... Yeah, go ahead, Alex, and I'm going to cut you off.
Sure. And so Greenpeace brought in tons of money for this. You know, everybody likes cute little seals and, oh, look, the seals, let's save the seals, let's send Greenpeace some money. Ironically, they hurt the environment because now the seal population increased so much that they ate all the fish. So there was no fish. You know, the whole ecosystem got thrown off balance. And the seals were never in danger in the first place. And there was no cruelty involved in the hunting. It's what they've been doing for thousands of years. So Greenpeace made a lot of money. The communities suffered and were destroyed. And, you know, that's where we're at. And the celebrities just go along with it because, you know, once they're finished ruining that community, the journalists never show up except this one guy from Iceland. And, you know, nobody ever hears about it. So the celebrities can keep running around with these ridiculous outfits and promoting all kinds of nonsense to keep these people poor and to pretend like they're saving the environment and, you know, get nice headlines from these so-called journalists here. And, you know, it's for their own benefit and it might even make them feel good about themselves. They might not really know the impact of what these silly campaigns are having on the local populations, on really some of the most vulnerable people in the world.
It's true. Same thing happened in Greenland. Even the Animal Planet, I actually saw a promo for that recently, did a TV, an episode about this called The Whale Wars, Viking Shores, and it was about Greenpeace and other organizations trying to stop this small little local community in Greenland from, again, doing something that they've been doing for hundreds of years, if not even more. They actually induct the young men into their society during this. It's almost like a ceremony, a ritual as well. And yes, it entails, you know, catching a certain amount of whales. But the fact is that the reason why so many people reacted to it is because they had they were doing the killing in the water. So the water turned red. And it looks really, really gruesome in that way. But the fact is that it's not that many whales being killed in comparison. This is, again, something that they've done for a long time. But people react to this. And actually, it's something that is good that they're letting the blood back into the water because this actually releases the nourishment back compared to some of the other you know, slaughters that exist out there. So this is, again, there was a minor little impact. But this, what this primarily was about is about changing their way of life. That you can't do this. Now you're going to import you know, grain and fruit and bananas and everything else from you know, other parts of the world to get the nourishment that you want. And how did they do that? Run it by fossil fuel tank ships, of course, and you know, freight, you know, everything else. So again, it's just ridiculous. And that's what so many of the problems about this is. Again, that it's about stopping people living their own way of life that they want to in whatever region that they're in, being adapted to what is there locally. I mean, what are they going to do next? Let's go up to the Eskimos and tell them that they can't, you know, live off the seals and the other fish up there. I mean, this is crazy. Where is it going to end?
They are doing that. They're doing that like crazy. Any little vulnerable community they can find, if there's a cute animal there that they can make a buck off of, they'll go up there and, you know, film them with a dead seal or a dead, you know, whatever, or they'll say that they're affecting the fish population. It doesn't matter if they've done this for thousands of years. It doesn't matter if they're going to die of starvation, if they can't catch their food anymore. They don't care. They don't care. They just keep doing it and doing it. And that's what this whole conference is to me. It's just a deceptive propaganda campaign that's all fun and good for these people that have plenty of money and tax money to draw on. But the results in the real world, the people that are starving to death, that's who is, you know, affected by this. That's where the real tragedy is. And nobody here seems to care about it. They give lip service to poverty and, oh, we'll have green jobs for these people. And that's just a bunch of nonsense.
Yeah, I believe you're right. Unfortunately, I do, because this is no good at all. And we've been trying the best we can to highlight the other side of the story because it's a massive movement and it's just going ahead with any rational thinking and without, you know, putting on the brakes a little bit and thinking twice about where we're going. It's just an open-armed, yes, let's do it, and here we go, without thinking through the consequences. Again, stopping people from living the way that they've been doing for thousands of years. But again, so as I said, Alex, this is about just highlighting the other side of this conference. And like you've been doing there, probably one of the lone voices there. So again, you're doing a great job, and we really want to thank you for your time and taking some of it off here to talk with us today. Is there anything else now that you feel is important to mention that we haven't really touched upon in the last few minutes we have here together, Alex?
No, I'd just like to encourage people to go out there and find the truth. I mean, you can find the truth. Don't listen to this hysteria that's being peddled by these so-called journalists. Go out there and use common sense. I mean, just if anyone's listening to this, go on Google and do your own research. Don't listen to these harebrained so-called journalists and these politicians and these NGO groups. Do your own research. Look what happened to the climate scam. Look what happened to the IPCC report. They couldn't even get correct the amount of the Netherlands that was under sea level. They've been wrong in so many important predictions, so many basic facts. It's just all a scam. They don't even care. And by the time all this is exposed, they've already moved on to the next thing, and they've already got the, you know, the well-meaning activists up in arms about something else, and they forget about the old thing. So don't be played for fools by these people. These people don't necessarily want your best, especially not at the higher levels. They want your money. They want to control you, and that's what it is. So do your own research. Don't believe what I say. Please don't believe what I say. Use your own mind. Use your own common sense. Go out there and look it up. Read. Don't watch your TV. Don't read the big newspapers, because it's just baloney. Use your own mind and go out there and find the truth for yourself.
Very good. Great job, Alex, with all the reports and the interviews. We will link some of these up, both from New America and some of the other papers out there that you're writing for. Now, what's the rest here, though? Is it over for the day? Is it more happening tomorrow? Is it all kind of closing off here now in a few hours? What's happening last?
In a few hours, they told us that they're going to come out with some big announcement that all of the governments, or the vast majority of the governments, signed this paper, and then we're supposed to be allowed to look at it and see what's in it.
Ah.
Kind of like with Obamacare, they'll pass it and then tell us what's in it. So that's what we're waiting for right now. We'll see what's in the document and see if everybody really did agree to it. And I mean, you've been to some of these conferences before. You know how it is. They, you know, pretend like they're working late into the night. Oh, everyone's fighting for their national interest and protecting the, you know, the interests of their citizens. And then they'll come out with the thing at 2 a.m, you know, with sweat on their brow.
Yeah, right. It's been so difficult to run this thing through. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know it.
We'll probably be here very late into the night, and tomorrow, hopefully, it'll all be done, and we'll go check out some of the sites in Rio and see what some of the regular people have to say.
Really good. Thank you, Alex. Safe journey back when you eventually go, and great having you with us. Thank you again so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks very much for having me, Henrik. Good luck.